right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. We're going to dive straight in. We're going to be talking about a lot of heavy stuff today, but we're going to keep it light as we do. But privacy is important, and privacy is a really big part of being able to be a sovereign individual, being able to be someone who is taking ownership not only for their actions and taking consequences for those, but taking ownership over their assets so that nobody can seize them or nobody can tell you what you can and cannot do with them. And privacy is a big part of, like, you know, maintaining control over that, control over your life. So we're going to bring on Alex Shipp, who's an expert in that. He's the chief strategy officer of Offshift. And Offshift is doing, you know, some tremendous work in the crypto space. And I'm also joined by another special guest who joins me every week, Mr. Aaron Pizzamind Malone. So before we bring on our guest, Alex, Aaron, how are you feeling?
I'm doing good, man. Bryce, are you extra inspired today by that Chinese spy balloon? What's going on over there?
I don't know what it is. It must be something in the new reverse osmosis water system I just installed under my kitchen sink. And no, this is not an ad.
Well, while you're doing lots of chores around the house, you got lots of time to think about privacy and making sure those windows are locked. No one's breaking in the crazy world of California over there. Everything's nice and peaceful here in Texas, fortunately, because we really, really care about that stuff. And when it comes to financial privacy, mm-hmm. we're now seeing that veil being lifted as all this news about the political donations that Sam Bankman-Fried made have now finally been published. When there wasn't a list before, now there magically is, mm-hmm. as they're asking for the money back. Classic.
Funny how that works. When who's asking for the receipts, right? You'll be able to find them if the right person's asking. Alex Shipp, welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast. How you doing today?
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Already you guys are sharing a bunch of anecdotes that I'm ready to comment on.
Well, let's hit it. What's your first inkling? Where would you want to take this conversation today?
Well, I mean, I'm supposed it would be best for me to introduce myself, or I should say reintroduce myself. I was actually on here with you one-on-one in March 2022.
Yes, you were.
Aaron, Pizzamind, you said Pizzamind Malone. I did not get to meet Aaron. So Aaron, this is our first run in here. So I'm looking forward to getting both of you guys this time around.
It's a pleasure, Alex.
Yeah, yeah. I'll sort of kick off here. I'm the CSO at Offshift. We are pioneering private decentralized finance on Ethereum Layer 1. And we're launching our debut platform the week of February 27th, Offshift and On. So we're very excited and have sort of a lot to talk about there, and definitely a lot to share with our community and others. And I'm doing the rounds here. On-chain privacy in particular, there's so much to be said. And not just on the CeFi side, you know, so to speak, whether you're talking about a centralized exchange or the recent stuff with Celsius Network and that whole release via the court order of user data and user information. But then, of course, also, the centralized exchange stuff with FTX. So there's a whole lot there that's on the centralized side. But on the DeFi side, a lot of people might not be aware, even though it was a little bit of a news piece from, I believe, TechCrunch this past week, that Addressable, which is a sort of digital fingerprint startup, I'm not sure if you guys have heard, but they just raised $7.5 million claiming that they can actually link on-chain addresses. That means Ethereum addresses, EVM addresses, to social media accounts, namely Twitter. They claim they've already linked 17 million addresses to social media accounts on Twitter using their proprietary algorithms. So that's,
I'm not going to lie, when I read that news report about Addressable, I was like calling bullshit. I'm like, this is Theranos for crypto. There's no fucking way.
Yeah. I mean, you'd like to think that, right? I mean, whether or not they are the real deal or whether or not they come through on their word, I think it's sort of an ominous, you know, note that people are working on this. There is money behind it. There are some VCs who believe in it. And so you can imagine 1, 2, 3 years out, there's going to be something that looks like Addressable that's going to be operational and functional.
Yeah, Alex, you know, tell me why, right? Why do people care about de-anonymizing, folks on the web? Is there a financial incentive? What's the reason that there's such an offensive against the individual?
Yeah, it always starts with that big M word, marketing, right? I mean, marketing is always sort of the, marketing is really the, where that first revenue stream, I think, takes form. That's kind of the big piece, which is where, and it exists in web too, right? Through social media organizations. But I think understanding your target market, understanding the demographics of the people that you're trying to, you know, notify or instill awareness about your products, your services, your platforms, that's sort of where the first, I think that's where the foothold is taken initially. And so that's at least, and again, addressable, you can look at their release. That is the, what they claim to be their business model, which is marketing to Web3 individuals and understanding those that demographic and what these people are doing in the Web3 space. So I think it starts there. It always starts there. And of course, data in general, I believe in 2017, 2018, there was that Economist article that data is now the world's most valuable commodity. It's past oil. And so now it's been pretty well established that there is tangible wealth vested in your data. And if an organization can aggregate a huge amount of data from a large number of individuals, which they can identify, then that's really powerful. They can make, you know, what you see Facebook making, what you see a lot of social media organizations making. But that's sort of what's called surveillance capitalism. Everyone's quite familiar with that now. But I think there's sort of this new addressable marks the beginning of this sort of new era of what I would call free market surveillance, which is where there's enough data that's available publicly between social media and other things where people have identified themselves, maybe pseudonymously, maybe personally, and anyone who can create the algorithms to link anonymous information to their public information can then have a lot of really good stuff that they can sell as well. And so right now it's hard to be anonymous in the digital domain, even in crypto, simply because you have your social media account and then those algorithms can track what you're doing in there and they can relate them to your social media account. And unfortunately, you end up, you know, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. I've been trying to warn people that they really haven't learned anything from the Cambridge Analytica scandal or letting Mark Zuckerberg mine all of their conversations. With ChatGPT now, they're just letting Sam Altman mine all of their thoughts and their work without a second thought. Why do you need a phone number to sign up for ChatGPT in the first place? Has anyone ever asked themselves? It's quite scary that the lessons are just not learned.
It's to verify, right? I mean, it's to verify that you're not a bot spinning up account and going to spam the network. And it's so that the person... I think they're verifying that it's a person actually making requests on the ChatGPT so it doesn't crash from a DDoS, right? So you need to have a phone number behind it because that's not spoofable. Not just anybody could have a phone number. And I don't think they let you do the Google Voice numbers or the voice over IP stuff.
I don't know, man. There's plenty of bots that have phone numbers these days. They tend to call me nonstop if I ever owe anything. So I'm going to have to refute that one. Touché. But there's also plenty of things like HCAPTCHA and things that don't give away your personal information or link you to link your personal data to whatever's going on over there. So again, I just don't know about that, but it's good to know, I guess, that they're trying to use these tools to maybe airdrop me a free NFT that I might be interested in, as opposed to like snooping on every transaction I might make or who my friends are, at least for now. So, you know, let's think positive about this stuff too. Personally, I like targeted ads, whatever I'm a sucker for buying things from Instagram. I mean, they show me a lot of cool stuff all the time.
Like, honestly, Instagram and Facebook have nailed their algo. I was golfing with a buddy the other day who had
Twitter
shoes,
not so much.
His whole outfit. He had shoes, clubs, gloves, everything that he bought from Instagram ads. And he was just a walking Instagram. That was hilarious.
Wow.
I got the shirt from an Instagram ad.
Alex, how'd you get interested in this stuff? Like, how did you get interested of being on the other side, fighting the marketing algos and even more than that, just, you know, empowering the individual? What were you doing before and what got you interested?
Yeah. I mean, this is sort of my foray into crypto began really, or well before, I mean, I joined or got involved in crypto in 2017, but my foray probably started when I learned about central banking several years, even earlier. And to me, the issue has always been about rehypothecation, fractional reserve lending. That's sort of where the imbalance begins. And so to me, the Bitcoin presented a brilliant and to me, comprehensive solution at the monetary level. And DeFi does a really good job at the level of finance. The challenge is that the virtual domain is being used sort of foundationally to create and implement and use these systems. And therein, data becomes rehypothecated as the foremost, you know, form of wealth. And so that's where you run into some new challenges, where to me, rehypothecation is now taking place all over again. And so privacy to me sort of seals the gap or brings the whole vision full circle. It's what's needed, and it's especially needed in the decentralized layer one environments like Ethereum. And I think, you know, but even to take that one step further, whether it's addressable or whether it's just this linking, that's the issue, is that if you're in the digital environment and you want this one siloed, closed in space where you're private, if any element of that, like just again, on-chain address is visible, it's really difficult because you've hooked in your phone number here, your name there, you've hooked in your every a lot of different other transactions and stuff that's public data. And so there's so many easy ways to develop really sophisticated, true, but they are very, very much in existence now, algorithms that can link the stuff that's private about you to the stuff that's public about you. And so you really need a way of restoring your anonymity on chain. You need to be able to do it's sort of like digital housekeeping, I would call it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a pretty good analogy, digital housekeeping, cleaning the cobwebs out. But do you ever kind of maybe think about or consider other kind of privacy preserving technologies and the uphill battle that they face with regulators? How do you guys think about that?
Yeah, that is a big challenge. I think on one hand, you know, the mission for everyone is to develop a decentralized solution and fully pass off. I mean, if you're in DeFi or if you're in the crypto space and your goal isn't to eventually pass off, you know, to dissolve, so to speak, and pass on everything to a DAO, you're not really in line with the mission. So that's obviously a big part of it, is that you want to be decentralized and community governed and community run and community owned. That is, you know, part and parcel what crypto is about. As far as the challenges with regulators and authorities, I think there are, you know, like Jake Chervinsky is someone who's sort of been a big leader in the space and has emerged as someone with the Blockchain Association that are doing some really important work on behalf of the small grassroots teams across the space. We're certainly a grassroots team. Because once you start picking up the money, once you start working and getting the VCs involved and some of the big organizations so that you can fund legal development, and have those individuals on your team, then of course you're kind of getting away from that decentralized, you know, grassroots ethos, that whole narrative. So I think the big thing though is that you have to just go ahead and do the thing that you know is right at the end of the day. I had a fireside chat with Edward Snowden last year, where he said that in the long run, the projects that are doing the right things and operating with integrity will make it. And he believes that firmly. So do I. I think it will be a bumpy ride, and there are a lot of things that we can't control that no one can control. But having at the very least, the Blockchain Association, like I said, at the forefront, some people that can represent the space is really important. And then I think it's also, again, about education. There have been a few people in Congress, some Emmer, I believe, and you have Cynthia Luma. So there are some people who are starting to show up and say, hey, actually, I've done my homework. Actually, I've educated myself. And some of the stuff that's going on in this space needs to be protected, and we need to be hands off and respectful. So I think there is hope, but yeah, it's going to be a challenging and bumpy ride, no doubt.
Yeah, and anything that's new always scares the government. Like back in the 90s when PGP encryption first came out, Congress wanted to ban it due to it being a threat for national security. Like, oh my God, people can, you know, code their messages like the CIA can now. We can't let this happen. But because they backed off and did allow that to happen, now we have e-commerce, the world's completely transformed because of it.
Bingo.
So not too worried about laws and regulators. Those people come and go. Laws come and go, get changed and overturned all the time. So I'll agree with Edward on this one. Just build it with integrity. Make it built to last. It'll be just fine. So let's talk about what you actually are building over there and how it's different from some of the existing privacy solutions. Give us the rundown of what we're going to see when you launch on February 27th.
Yeah. So we're launching our platform off. Well, it's the week of February 27th, I should say, just to clarify. The platform is off shipped and on, and it's a fully layer one privacy application, runs on Ethereum, where users can restore their anonymity on chain. And that means that they can take our native token XFT, they can burn that, and then they can mint on the other side to a unique address and on assets. So we have these. Right now, when we launch, we'll have one Anon asset. That'll be Anon USD. But it's sort of a palette of synthetics is the longer term vision or the midterm vision, whereby users can be dissociated from their capital in minting that synthetic, that stablecoin, wherever you want to call it, on the other side. And then from there, the idea is, can we integrate these Anon assets, Anon USD in particular, into existing public DeFi platforms? Can we create a sort of community and a token around privacy? One thing I would like to speak to is what you said sort of about regulators. There is also a huge, privacy has become, rather ironically mainstream. And that you see Apple's privacy campaign, you see privacy is becoming such a big and mainstream concept at this point that people are interested in it. And I think that's really important. If anyone at all wants to restore their on-chain privacy for any reason, they're going to be able to. And I think they're becoming more and more educated about why they need to do so. I also think that other DeFi platforms in the space are going to be interested in getting some exposure to privacy. You see MakerDAO, for example, having some USDC behind DAI, and a lot of platforms that have collateralized stablecoins or collateralized synthetics might want to diversify those collateral pools, might want some exposure to privacy if they believe it's going to be another big growth catalyst for the space. So I think there's room. There isn't really any synthetic, there isn't really any on-chain stablecoin out there that gives platforms exposure to this demand for on-chain privacy. So we're kind of trying to get that going as far as our community is concerned, as far as our platform is concerned, and but really more widely as far as the entire Ethereum Layer 1 ecosystem is concerned.
Wow, awesome. So am I getting this right that maybe one of the ideal scenes is that Offshift will create a stablecoin collateralized by a bunch of these private assets, potentially?
Well, I'd say other way around. So Offshift is generating the Anon asset, right? The Anon asset is built, is designed, or is minted through our protocol. You take XFT, you could actually even do it right from Ethereum, and the buying and burning of the XFT takes place under the hood. And what happens is you submit 0.05F and you select, you designate a withdrawal address. So when you put that XFT, you burned it into the protocol, you can mint to a new address the Anon asset, the Anon USD. At that point, you become dissociated from your capital and you are the anonymous owner of Anon USD at a separate, fresh Ethereum wallet address, all on layer one. From that point, as more people, we build a market for this, we have an LP rewards program for Anon USD WrappedDeath. People begin to start to build a market. It's a public ERC-20 token. That's kind of the beauty of it. There are no barriers to feature implementation or platform integration, and other platforms that may want to integrate or may want to use it in a decentralized lending platform. And again, on a synthetics or like another collateralized protocol that has a stablecoin, can start to use that somewhat for their collateral. And so that's a really exciting thing that we want to see is a token that signifies, that represents demand for privacy and the principles of absolute privacy at the individual level as a human right, being integrated around the space.
This is nothing less than an absolute godsend for so many people around the world that are experiencing crazy hyperinflation in their countries or a new central bank digital currency encroaching on their freedoms. Like Nigeria right now is having all kinds of issues with their cash being purposely removed from the system to start grooming them for a central bank digital currency. And because of this, Bitcoin's at all-time highs over there. But if there was something stable to move their wealth into in any market condition, whether it's capital flight from a communist country or just people trying to preserve their existing wealth from hyperinflation, which is going on all over the world, this is incredible. This has really been a huge missing piece of the ecosystem, something where draconian governments can't seize or stop capital flight from leaving their grasp, and people are taking the power back. So I commend you greatly for what you've built. And it's really exciting to see this is composable. And that's a word you're going to hear a lot more in the days and years to come, composable with the rest of the DeFi ecosystem and all the money Legos being built on Ethereum. So great job.
Thank you. Yeah, composability, I think, is a really big part of it. For us, definitely. What we were doing previously building out a platform that I talked about the last time I was on was that we would have these confidential on-chain assets, which are, you know, it's a pretty profound idea as well. But of course, they are cryptographic commitments. There's any sort of integration, any sort of feature that would be added would represent a major technical milestone. Whereas an Anon asset being a fully public standard ERC-20 token, yeah, it's extremely composable. And I think composability is really part and parcel of what's important for users that are interested in privacy, because it needs to be user-friendly. At this point, as privacy hits the mainstream, if it's not user-friendly, most people are going to be averse and probably are going to step away. If it's expensive, they're definitely going to step away. So for us, a huge part of it is being sort of, as we say, sort of a one-stop, two-click opt-out. You know, want to be private today. It's digital housekeeping. It's something where you can restore your anonymity on-chain just like that. It's real simple. Anyone can do it. And so those assets being composable too, being able to exist in other ecosystems on other platforms is really important as well.
Yeah. Outside of Ethereum, who do you like? What ecosystems or platforms are competitive, are looking good? Who do you like? Who's your pick?
I'm not here to vouch for any layer ones. I don't want this to be mistaken for a,
No financial advice.
Yeah. Not a personal promotion. We had originally, and we deployed on Substrate, and we have bridged to Moon River, which is, sort of the, what we saw as the strongest EVM parachain. That is on Kusama though, not Polkadot. The Moonbeam would be the EVM parachain on Polkadot. We do have a bridge to Moon River. When we set that up, that was sort of remains today to be our second bet. I'm not sure how much of a community has really taken form over there in Polkadot or on Kusama at this stage in the game in 2023. We did like their consensus, did like a lot of what they're doing. At this point, though, honestly, we're very focused on Ethereum. And it seems to be that Ethereum is really where all of the development is, and it's where the community base is. And so, of course, you do have some challenges going across chains with liquidity, fragmentation, and these sorts of things. I don't want to say that we are opposed to going onto another chain in the future, because we're not, and we do keep an eye open about, this space changes so fast. But for that being said, we've really owned in on Ethereum, and especially for launching our mainnet here, and for the foreseeable future, we're very Ethereum focused.
Is all privacy created equal, or are some algorithms and technologies maybe a little bit more private and secure than others? How should we, as the general public, go about grading the different privacy options that are out there?
Well, I will say that that's a really personal question. Depends on the individual. I think one of the big pieces there are a few pieces I actually like to mention there. One, I definitely don't think all privacy solutions are created equal. No. at this stage, unfortunately, it's just, there are just so many prying eyes and prying hands that you really have to do a little bit of homework at least and see what you think is going to stand the test of time. That's why, and again, I think one of the big pieces is composability, because you can build a really robust privacy solution Monero is one I could definitely speak very positively about, and Monero has a great community around them. As DeFi has sort of taken form over the last few years, though, being siloed, being isolated, drives a pretty high cost, because it takes users away from yields. So now you're choosing between privacy and yields. That's not a great situation. It's not one that anyone really wants to be in, except for the core supporters, the core believers in privacy. So to me, I think at the end of the day, what makes, you have on one side the technical, it needs to be technically really robust and audited and all sorts of things. We went through an audit. But then on the other side of that, the second piece that's so important is the composability, which you alluded to, which is that, what are the trade-offs, one, to using this? If I can't access yields, if I can't provide liquidity, if I are no synthetics, if I'm just having one coin which is volatile and I'm sending it between addresses, what can't I do? And that the answer in 2023 is a lot. And then the second piece, of course, is where else can I go? And the answer in that case is no, there's almost nowhere else you can go. You're kind of stuck to that chain. So composability is really an important piece. And of course, user-friendly is the other side, which is, how difficult is this to learn, to master? And I think Monero is pretty simple at this point to use. Credit to them. But again, for example, if you want to use like Onion or Tor, these sorts of things, again, it needs to be super simple. And that's the best way we're going to get privacy sort of, especially when you talk about from a regulatory standpoint, where will the challenges be? The more people that are interested in privacy, the more people that are able to access and restore their own privacy will make for a better situation at the regulatory level. Because at the end of the day, they have to respond to the people.
Yeah. And actually, speaking of people, that's a great segue, to your team and yourself. I mean, I guess when I think of privacy teams, you have the Moneros of the world, where it's an anonymous developer base. Or you have a lot of these other protocols, secret network, anonymous devs. And so it's hard to have those guys go negotiate for you at Capitol Hill. But do you have a bunch of shadowy super coders, as they refer themselves, per the meme? Or are you guys a bunch of buttoned up businessmen who are just trying to kind of do things a different way, or somewhere in between?
Yeah, I mean, we do have a very brilliant team. I'm the sort of face and name that's public. Everyone else is anonymous. And so it's on me to sort of communicate their vision and express my own perspective at the same time. Our mission sort of, our mission statement sort of, or our philosophy sort of mirrors what Glenn Greenwald said, which was that people in positions of public power and public service, public duty, for them, everything should be transparent. For everyone else, we should have privacy. And so insofar as they're individuals, they do choose to protect their privacy and remain anonymous. Totally fine. But insofar as we're developing, and we're launching a platform for public use, we need to provide as much transparency and we have into the development process, into the audit process, into the philosophy behind the platform, the tokenomics that underpin it, and everything else. I do want to say, though, that, yeah, as far as the regulation, it's tough because, again, I alluded to it at the beginning. But if you want to be a grassroots team, then it's really difficult to have a whole legal department and to fund that. And so I think I can't say enough positive things about the Blockchain Association than in Jake Chervinsky, because they are at least standing up for a large group of privacy projects. Privacy projects are on the rise, and it's not just in crypto either. I mean, you do have the Proton Mails, you do have the Brave browsers, and you do have other sorts of technologies, private messaging platforms that are popping up everywhere. And yeah, we do need a representative to sort of defend us against sort of authoritarian encroachment.
What do you think about the Ethereum ecosystem as a whole? You know, there's been so many development updates and proposals that have been passed. What should we expect coming down the pipeline here in 2023 in terms of improvements?
Oof. Well, I have spoken on the Merge previously a bit. That's something we're really interested in, particular with the Verge, if that starts to pick up some steam and if, you know, that sort of development process gets underway, because that will vastly improve layer one scalability, which is really important to us as a project committed to layer one. But I think just from listening into Vitalik, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse here, but I mean, he came out at ETH Denver 2022 last year and said privacy is really the missing piece on Ethereum as far as, you know, pragmatic use cases are concerned. He went again on the Up Only podcast and talked about it. And now he recently published on Twitter that it was sort of a lengthy document about his take on stealth addresses. So it seems like there are so many different angles that are being explored right now. I mean, there are obviously ZKs in the roll-up department for scalability, but it seems like that's going quite well. And again, a lot of the stuff that's happening on Polygon and other layer two environments for scalability is excellent, and there is a use case for that. But as far as privacy, and especially layer one privacy, that's the place where I think a lot of really smart people that want to get Ethereum adopted and sort of moved into the public is... That's a big area, and I think it's one that this year there's going to be a lot of different, I don't want to say experimentation, but I think a lot of people are moving in that direction, and it's going to become more widely accepted, which is really important, which sort of taking privacy out of that, it's been relatively demonized, unfortunately. But I think, you know, in the Ethereum ecosystem now, there are just so many more individuals and organizations and development teams working on it, and to have sort of that leading figure, Vitalik, you know, for it's not great to idolize a guy, but someone who's out there as sort of the foremost figure of the ecosystem speaking about privacy as a necessary component of the ecosystem is great. So yeah, I do think there's going to be a lot going on there.
Love it. And kind of to wrap things up, one last question for you. I'm curious, what's like the secret sauce, right? What's the special sauce that goes into Offshift that makes it successful? Is it some fancy technology? Is it a really strong community? If you were to kind of try to ping it down to one thing.
Well, I do have to say a lot of positive things about our community. We do have some really knowledgeable people. But I will say, though, if there is one secret sauce on the technical side, it's ZK proofs, zero knowledge proofs, which, you know, even okay. To answer the previous question, to elaborate more deeply, that is the big theme. And I think a lot of people spoke about it in 2022 or even 2021, thinking it would be the big thing of the year. But at this point, ZK proofs are really emerging. And that's what allows you to share or validate, rather, some information without exposing that information. So that is the secret sauce for all privacy solutions at this point. It's one of the most promising technologies in the space. And again, I alluded to ZK rollups earlier. It's also really useful for scalability. So between the layer two solutions and the privacy solutions on chain, zero knowledge proofs are the absolute secret sauce. And for us, using ZK Snarks for our debut platform is what makes it work. I mean, bottom line, without that, it's not happening.
You know,
really.
I didn't mean to throw you for such a head fake, but I got a follow-up question. Is there any limitations right now to scaling, you know, ZK proofs? Because I've actually started to see a lot of companies come out and say they're giving, you know, they're providing infrastructure for hardware acceleration of ZK proofs. Is this kind of like needed, or what's kind of the state of like making ZK proof computation super scalable to like, you know, be in everybody's phone, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, this is one of the challenges with, I wish, because we have some brilliant, brilliant technical people on our team who deserve to answer these questions. What I can say is yeah, definitely scalability for the ZK proofs is so, so, so important because, yeah, they are computationally intensive, very computationally intensive. With our previous platform, which we developed, but found that we wouldn't be able to deploy it on layer one because it uses bulletproof ZK proofs, which are way too computationally intensive for Ethereum layer one in its current form. And so, you know, for the time being, we have this other platform that we're about to launch, which is employs ZK snarks with an SN instead of ZK starks with the T, which is also too computationally intensive for layer one. And so right now, ZK snarks involve what's called a multi-party computation ceremony because it uses a common reference string or for every transaction and to carry out operations in the protocol. And you can generate that string in a trustless or a somewhat decentralized way with a lot of people contributing and discarding their piece of the string. So ZK snarks can be used and they are much, 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 much more efficient. But again, to really, when you want to get deeper, when you want to build confidential synthetics and things, yeah, you're absolutely right. The computational intensivity is extreme. And one angle there, I mean, the specialized hardware is an interesting angle to scalability as well. That's sort of coming up or popping up because, yeah, a lot of people are saying, wow, yeah, at the layer one level, it's just so difficult to make that work. And so, yeah, I think that's a really big piece for people in the privacy space that don't want to compromise on the principles, that want to keep it decentralized, that are saying, okay, what other alternatives do we have to putting this ZK proof stuff on a layer two? And that's a really interesting angle. I'd like to see more and more of it. But the last thing I'll say to that is The Verge is one of the better pieces. The Verge
is called?
Well, The Verge, V-E-R-G-E. The Merge is composed of Merge, The Surge, The Verge, The Splurge, and The Purge. And that was sort of all put out. Yeah. And
yeah, I remember that. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Each one is a different element of Ethereum scalability. And so The Merge is focused on the proof of stake transition, and The Surge is focused on the rollups, getting layer two scalability. But the Verge is focused on switching to a vector-based hash system, I believe, away from Merkle trees that will make layer one scalability much more efficient.
Wow.
When should we expect that to go live? Of course, that's a loaded question. But until there's any further updates or delays, what's the current schedule?
Well, Vitalik said in an interview with Bankless that was at the beginning of 2022, I believe. So we're already a year into that. That he believes the entire process will be complete in 6 years, so five more. Okay. But the thing is that it's not really happening in sequentially. It's not like the merge is complete, then the surge is complete, then they're all sort of in an ongoing process gradually. So the Verge is, you know, in that way is when those pieces that are necessary from the Verge get completed is hard to say. We sort of keep an eye on that and see how development's looking. But yeah, they're all sort of moving sort of in lockstep. So it's exciting. It's exciting to see what can happen on layer one and how much more scalable it can become.
Love it. Well, shit, I learned quite a bit today. Alex Shipp, thank you for dropping some knowledge bombs here on us at Crypto 101 Podcast. We hope to have you back on again soon.
Thank you. It's a pleasure every time.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.